Stay tuned after the show for a message from Nokia.
So imagine you come to work, you open up your computer, you find an email, and you find out that there is a major project that needs to be done. And the entire fate of your team, and this is a team that's, you know, dozens of people, rests on how best you manage this and resolve this problem. But then imagine on top of that, your boss goes, I'm going to leave it to all of you to figure out how to manage. And I'm not going to really give you a sense of what we're working toward or how I can help you given, you know, my kind of higher level position. And that's kind of where we're at here with this pandemic. The federal government at this point has said, you know, we're here to support states and localities in fighting a national pandemic, but there will not be a nationally led response.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, as the country continues to see new surges in coronavirus cases, are states getting the support they need from the White House? What sort of aid and support are the states that are seeing a surge in cases right now getting from the federal government?
Honestly, it's not a whole lot that's new. I'm Adam Cankren. I'm a healthcare reporter here at Politico. So for the last several months, the federal government has done a few core things. One, they've taken charge of the supply chain of getting equipment, personal protective equipment, medical supplies, and more recently, testing supplies out to the various states. So there's that kind of a federal pipeline. But it is still inadequate. So you still have places that are scrambling to find things like N95 masks, like medical gowns, the kinds of stuff that we've maybe never would have thought of before, you know, February or March, and now can't get off our mind. Things like nasal swabs for tests and reagents. So that's kind of what the federal government has done. And then they've given some advice, but that advice has been largely the same, even as we've seen cases start to tick up again. And that advice is chiefly do more testing. Try to do more testing around congregate places like nursing homes, meatpacking plants, where a lot of times, you know, there are higher odds of there being, you know, clusters of cases of being new outbreaks. And that's been essentially it. Now, the CDC is on the ground in some states, but the signal has been sent that this is something that is going to be managed by the states and localities. And it's going to be up to them to figure out, number one, what's going on in their areas, and then figuring out how to respond to it as well.
Do state leaders feel like they can do this on their own? Do they feel like they have what they need?
In a word, no. This is no way to run a national response to a national pandemic. The idea that we're fighting a virus that respects no boundaries, and we're fighting it county by county or state by state, just doesn't make sense from an overall, you know, public health emergency response standpoint. And then secondly, you know, you talk to public health officials in these states and these localities, and they say, well, we're doing the best we can with what we have. But what we have is frankly inadequate. And that goes back to, again, equipment, supplies, guidance, just a general sense of feeling that, you know, when they put something into practice, it's going to come with the full backing of the federal government. I'll give you one example, and it's very basic, but it's something that's been in the news over the past, you know, several weeks. The idea of mask wearing. This is something that you talk to any public health expert, they say it should not be a partisan issue. Shouldn't be a problem. It should be grounded in science. Either the masks help or they don't help. At this point, we've determined that it's probably worth wearing them, and they're probably making some kind of progress against protecting people from catching disease. But these state governors and these public health officials are a little bit nervous about mandating these masks, and were nervous for a while about mandating these masks because they felt that they weren't getting the kind of political space from the federal government, from the president, to be able to do it without creating a political uproar, without kind of carving their areas, their residents into partisan camps. So things as basic as mask wearing, public health officials have had to think twice about how they mandate things, how they put measures into place because of the lack of support from the federal government and the politicization of this response overall.
In Texas, which is one of the states where we've seen a surge recently, the governor is now hitting the pause button on their reopening of the state. He's also calling for people to wear masks. I mean, do you think it has gotten to a point where these governors are being forced into a situation where they have to put politics aside, despite what the Trump administration is saying?
To a degree, it has. And that's largely because there's just no denying what's happening on the ground at this point. There are record numbers of coronavirus cases in places like Texas and Florida that were doing fine in the early phases of the pandemic, when most of the cases were concentrated in places like New York and New Jersey. But as places have reopened, what we've seen is this community spread, is this uptick in cases in places that were very eager to follow the president's urgings that we reopen the economy and get things started. And for a while, that was easy enough to ignore and say, well, this is a temporary spike. But it's gotten to the point now where in places like Austin, Texas, in places like Houston, hospital officials are warning, you know, they're running out of beds. We're getting to levels of the crisis that we have not seen since the kind of initial first wave of the pandemic. And that's creating a situation where no matter what your politics are, you can't really ignore what's happening to your residents, what's happening in your cities and counties and states.
Underlying all of this is the message from the White House that everything is okay. And they're pointing to the fact that there's an increase in testing and that that's why we're seeing these spikes, not because of response problems, not because of a lack of support. Is that true?
It depends on how you look at it. But either way, the increase in testing doesn't account for at least half of the cases that we're seeing, and certainly is not a reason to kind of dismiss what we're seeing from state to state. So I was talking to a task force official, and this person said, you know, our data shows that about 50% of these new cases are because of increased testing. And we're extra encouraged because despite this rise in cases, you're still seeing a downward trend in the daily death toll. And that's fine and good. And, you know, frankly, that may very well be true. The flip side to that is 50% of those cases are not because of increased testing. It's because of new clusters, new outbreaks, and some community spread. And though the death toll is, sure, trending downward, over the past couple of days, we've seen that number tick up again. And an important thing to remember about that, it is what public health officials call a lagging indicator. So people may be catching coronavirus now. A lot of times it will take a couple weeks, a month, for the deaths to start kind of registering in tandem. So the worst is likely still to come if you talk to a lot of public health officials. And judging the response, judging the state of the nation at this point by what the death numbers look like is premature and only gives you part of the picture.
With the fact that public health officials are saying the worst is still to come, and the fact that the federal government is virtually leaving the response to states on their own, what do you think is going to happen if there is a major second wave? Like, how do you think that will change the relationship, if at all, between the White House and states?
This is the major question. Now, we know on the federal side of things, what they've really focused on is rebuilding the national stockpile, is shoring up supply lines, making sure that domestic production is being increased for things like N95 masks, for things like gloves and testing equipment, which is well and good. And if we hit a second wave, the reality is that we will be much more prepared than we were in February and March when, frankly, the coronavirus came, hit us in the mouth, and we had no idea what was happening for a few days there. All that being said, we're still nowhere near completely prepared for a second wave. The number of tests that we are able to do, even though it's much, much better than early on, about 40 to 50 million tests a month we're anticipating by September, sounds like a lot, but if we hit a second wave, we'll be not nearly enough to kind of manage the demand. And there are still, again, these supply issues that only the federal government at this point can fix. So on the ground, what you have right now is an attempt to, one, respond to this first wave, and then without having a breath, without having a chance to gather yourself, state and local officials also having to do their planning months down the road for a second, potentially worse wave. And that's contributing to burnout. That's really kind of stressing the system. And it's forcing people to make hard choices about what do we focus on? How do we kind of prepare for things? And what level of new cases and deaths at this point do we just have to accept is inevitable?
Adam Cankren, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks very much.
Also today, the Trump administration is urging the Supreme Court to strike down the Affordable Care Act. In a new legal briefing filed last night, the administration argues that Obamacare became invalid when Congress got rid of penalties for not having health insurance. The Justice Department says with the individual mandate gone, quote, the remainder of the ACA cannot survive. The administration is joining Texas and other Republican-led states in a lawsuit that, if successful, could wipe out health insurance for more than 20 million Americans. The move sets up a renewed clash with Democrats over health care in the middle of a global health crisis and ahead of the November election. And the health department whistleblower who was ousted from his role heading up the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority is claiming that Health Secretary Alex Azar is illegally retaliating against him for speaking out about failures of the government's response to the coronavirus pandemic. In an amended complaint filed with a federal watchdog, Dr. Rick Bright alleged that Azar has tried to undermine him in his new role at the NIH, where he's working on ramping up diagnostics for the virus. Bright claims that his replacement as acting BARDA chief, Gary Disbro, has said that Azar did not want health department staff helping Bright, warning that, quote, there would be hell to pay. Disbro and other officials at the health department swiftly rejected the claims. The Politico Dispatch production team this week included Jenny Ament and Sadeep Reddy. Our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Now more than ever, strong and secure connections are critical to the nation's success. That's why Nokia powers the connections that keep our country strong. And we're doing it all here from America. With 10,500 direct jobs and nearly half of our global procurement spent in the U.S., Nokia empowers our country to help American business stay in business. Learn more at nokia.com/opentomore.